Good morning. Our first case this morning is appeal number 043314, and it's the United States versus John Wyatt, and it's Mr. Sinan.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Nishay Sanan on behalf of the appellant John Wyatt in this matter. Mr. Wyatt has raised several issues focusing on two specific areas in this appeal. The first area would be the detention when he was pulled over and this eventual search of his vehicle. The second issue presented before this court is a sentencing matter and whether or not he would fall under career offender status given the current state of the guidelines. The first issue I want to address before this court has to do with the motion to suppress and whether or not the initial detention of Mr. Wyatt exceeded the scope of what it was for. As the facts set forth in this case, Mr. Wyatt was stopped crossing the border from St. Louis into southern Illinois for traveling 5 miles over the speed limit. He was pulled over by Officer Metchik, and Officer Metchik approached Mr. Wyatt. During that approach, there was a conversation for approximately 2 minutes, and that's borne out both in the motion, the transcript of the motion to suppress, and also the videotape that was presented to the district court. During those 2 minutes, Officer Merchak was able to determine that Mr. Wyatt was traveling from Phoenix to Chicago in a rental RV and was handed a driver's license.
I'm going to stop you and ask you what, other than the length of the encounter, would we think about here to reverse the district court's conclusion that the post-stop encounter was consensual?
Judge, it would be the facts that are attributed to why there was reasonable suspicion to seize this vehicle. And the facts that are presented, or what Officer Merchak testifies is what his reasonable suspicion in this matter is, or what he articulates, start off to be three things. First, that the defendant is nervous. Second, that the RV documents say he's coming from Mesa instead of Phoenix. And then third, that he's traveling from Arizona to Chicago in the winter. And the reason why those are important is as soon as he gets back to his car, that's what he calls in over the radio to call backup based on. And it's also at that time he starts to fill out a consent to search form. Those are the three things that he articulates as soon as he has contact, a two-minute contact with Mr. Wyatt, and those are the facts that he bases his reasonable suspiciousness to detain this vehicle. Those are the first things he articulates. Now, it's clear when he testified that those were the only three things because that's what he radios over the police dispatch before he calls for backup. And the basis for his backup then becomes police safety, even though at no time when he approached Mr. Wyatt did he ever try to ask Mr. Wyatt to pat him down to make sure that there was no weapons involved. And it's after those first 2 minutes that all of a sudden Officer Merchak decides that something just isn't right. That's his quote. He has a hunch. But what does he do? He begins to fill out a consent to search, which makes it clear during that initial time frame that he intended to stop this vehicle no matter what. As the stop went further, Mr. Merchak articulates other things which he believes gives him reasonable suspicion to detain the car, and that is that the bed was too high in this vehicle. Again, all these things that are articulated are innocent factors.
Well, not going 60 in a 55-mile zone. I mean, the man, you know, why it gave the officer reason to stop him.
Well, I don't disagree with you, Your Honor. He had reason to stop him, but what was the scope of that stop? The scope of that stop was to either issue him a citation for speeding or to give him written warning or verbal warning. That's the scope of the detention for the purpose of the stop.
Yes, but once he stops him, he looks in that window and he sees that the bed...
is too high, so he states.
So high that it's very suspicious.
Well, as Mr. Officer Merchak testified, he's not an expert in RVs, nor has he ever seen an RV that didn't have a bed too high. The question is the bed being too high an innocent factor that is sufficient to give him reasonable suspicion to then want to detain this vehicle?
Isn't it a combination of things we have to look at? Maybe each of these things individually could be innocent. It's putting them all together. And isn't that what we have to do and what the officer did?
Correct, Your Honor. It's looking at the totality of the circumstances when you take all of these suspicions together. This court, the Seventh Circuit, has stated in Jerez that several innocent factors, when looked together, can combine to give reasonable suspicion. However, Jerez also states that looking at those innocent factors, something has to point to specific criminal activity. We don't have that here. And even Judge Herndon states on page 106 of the transcripts, lines 9 through 12, that looking at all these things separately, there's a problem. But looking at it together, at no time does Judge Herndon point to particular criminal activity that even the officer can point to, which Jerez requires. I mean, there's no doubt that looking at this in the totality of circumstances, there has to be more than just several innocent factors. And even Judge Herndon at the district court level said, if you look at these individual factors separately, that there is a problem for the government.
Yeah, but when you consider them together, and you consider a narcotics officer's experience, and you've got a problem.
Well, but Judge, if you look at them, what is there that Officer Merchak puts before the district court level that points then, taking these innocent factors, to specific criminal activity? Your Honor, is this court...
Well, his nervousness is usually a big tip. I mean, that nervousness could be innocent, and then when he asked for the explanation, he said it was cold weather.
That's correct. So that's something that could be either innocent or taken in totality not innocent.
Well, right,
right.
That's
correct. The problem. But, yes, the flip side, but, not innocent. I know you want us to read it one way and on one way only, but I'm saying the nervousness is definitely something that can be an indication that somebody's engaged in some criminal activity.
But Your Honor, it could also be, and the case law has said before, even out of the Seventh Circuit, that nervousness doesn't have to mean that it is criminal activity.
Right.
But
yeah.
Even looking at it together, I mean, if you take all the facts in this case, And I know that the Tenth Circuit is not binding on this court. I'd ask this court to look at United States versus Salzano, which is 158 F3D 1107. The facts in that case are almost exactly the facts in this case. The only difference is, in that case, there was a smell of evergreen air freshener. In this case, after the officer already decided he was going to detain this vehicle, he finds out that Mr. Wyatt's on probation. I mean, if you look at the facts of that case and the facts of this case, they are almost exactly on point. You have an RV traveling on an interstate with a driver driving alone.
This one was at 3:20 in the morning. What
That's
was
correct,
the
Judge.
Time of the other?
Of our case, yes, it was 3:20.
Our case was 3:20.
It was approximately 3:20 in the morning, crossing the border from St. Louis going into Chicago. In the Salazar.
That's a fact that you add to the mix of all these other things, too.
And Judge, again, it could be looked at as an innocent fact or a fact of a person traveling alone in an RV at 3.
But if you can look at it both ways, mm-hmm. and a reasonable finder of fact looked at it one way, after hearing all the evidence, seeing the what can we do?
Well,
aren't our hands sort of tied?
No, Your Honors, they're not tied because this court, which it has done many times. In Seventh Circuit precedent has found that even when you add all these together and look at it under the totality of circumstances, that the district court was wrong, that there was not enough reasonable suspicion, especially looking at the Jerez case where you have, as Judge Williams stated, all these innocent facts looked at together, there still has to be something that specifically points to criminal activity. That's right out of the Seventh Circuit case law. Judge, if you take all these the same factors in this case, and look at the Tenth Circuit case, you have the exact same situation where they found that the district court erred and found that there was no reasonable suspicion to search the vehicle. I see that I'm running out of time. I'd like to say some rebuttal.
Yeah. Good morning, Mr. Porter.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, I am, of course, James Porter, and I'm an assistant United States attorney from the Southern District of Illinois, and I represent the plaintiff appellee. The issues, as Mr. Sinan has said, are the motions to suppress, and when one looks at that, the standard of review is that questions of law are reviewed de novo, while questions of fact are reviewed for clear error. Further, one should note that a district court's factual finding will be clearly erroneous only if, after review of the entire record, the Court of Appeals is left with the definite and firm conviction that a mistake has been made.
Well, can you just jump right? Can we just cut right to the Solzano case, which counsel is relying on? Because I don't see that you reference that in your response and tell us why that shouldn't apply here.
Well, the Tenth Circuit law does not apply, as Mr. Sinan has already indicated, and the Seventh Circuit law does, and the Seventh Circuit law in Jerez and other cases are clear that what was done here was entirely reasonable, given the standards, given what had occurred. The facts of the case, of the, our case, show that the district judge's determinations, that the actions of the officer in stopping the defendant and then in reacting to what the defendant did and said and told him, were completely reasonable under the circumstances of this case. The initial stop is not in question. It was a speeding stop. The officer noted the unusual position of the mattress, which was also remarked upon by the district judge who saw the videotape of the stop that was created. The officer remarked upon the extreme nervousness, not just nervousness of a person who's been stopped by a police officer, and the officer said, I discount for that. I stop people all the time. This man was so extremely nervous beyond any kind of cause or reason that it drew my attention to it. The man gave what the officer thought was an unusual and conflicting story about renting a vehicle and driving to Arizona and then renting another vehicle, this time the RV, and driving it back to Chicago on a vacation. The officer felt that driving an RV to Chicago in January for a vacation was unusual, especially from a warm southern state like Arizona.
Don't let our tourism bureau hear you.
I hope not, Your Honor. They may not let me leave. The judge specifically found there was the only issue of fact really was that the defendant testified that he did not give consent for the dog sniff. The officer testified that he did, and the judge weighing the conflicting testimony, and under the standard of giving the judge particular deference to the district court who had opportunity to hear the testimony and observe the witnesses, the district court found that the defendant did consent to the dog sniff. Which alerted the officer that there were probably illegal drugs inside. And even then, Your Honors, the defendant was not detained. In fact, he was totally free to leave. In fact, he did leave. He got in a cab and left the state and wasn't heard from again for some time. Because of that, Your Honor, because of the facts and the findings made by the district court, the United States believes the ruling and judgment of the district court should be affirmed. As to the second issue is the career offender issue, the standard of review, of course, is that a district court's determination is for clear error while review of its interpretations of the sentencing guidelines is de novo. Whether or not an offense is a crime of violence for purposes of sentencing is a question of law that the Seventh Circuit reviews de novo. The only dispute in this case is whether one of Mr. Wyatt's prior convictions was a crime of violence. The district court simply applied clear Seventh Circuit precedent, the Bryant case, to determine that it was a crime of violence and thus found so, and because the district court clearly applied Seventh Circuit precedent, the district court's findings should be affirmed. Your Honor, if there are no further questions, I would simply ask that the judgment and sentence of the district court in this case be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Porter.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Going back to the issue of whether or not the detention exceeded its scope, counsel brings up the fact that Mr. Wyatt gave consent. However, looking at the facts, what took place, the scope of this stop is for a speeding ticket. A point comes, which is clear during the testimony during the motion to suppress, that he has handed back his license and he has handed back his registration. He turns to leave. But taken to the facts that the officers took him out of the motorhome initially, brought him back to the motorhome, and the officer says that he wants to have a quote-unquote consensual conversation with Mr. White, which he states that he couldn't have had at the window of the car. It's quite clear that this officer intended, right from the get-go, 2 minutes into this stop, that he was going to search that vehicle no matter what. And when he made that decision, there was only three things before him. One is nervousness, which he articulates even to his captain. The nervousness, Mesa versus Phoenix on the rental agreement, and also that he is driving from Phoenix to Chicago in the winter. Looking at those three under the totality of the circumstances, it does not rise to the level of reasonable suspicion. Then he goes further and tries to add additional facts, the bed, as Your Honor pointed out, which the judge did look at. but he's no expert in beds. But all the factors that this officer relied upon were innocent factors. What the district court even said, and citing back to Jerez and the Tenth Circuit case, even though it's not binding on this court, that after all these innocent facts are taken together, there is still nothing that this officer could point to specifically that criminal activity was going on. I see that I'm out of time, Your Honor. We'd be asking that you reverse the decision on the motion to suppress. I haven't had an opportunity to address the sentencing enhancements. However, I think it's been briefed completely. And given the current state of Booker, we'd ask that that also be reversed. Thank you.
Mr. Sinan and Mr. Porter, thank you so much.